you meet the most interesting people at Oshkosh. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. One thing is pretty certain when the end of July comes around each year. If there's been an interesting aviation story in the past year, the principal characters will be found at EAA AirVenture. Today, I'm going to share the words of two interesting people we met at Oshkosh this summer. The first is Jessica Cox, who, with the help of the folks at AbleFlight, earned her sport pilot certificate despite having been born without arms. Aero TV was there as she talked with the crowd about her story.
Every day when I think about it, if I'm not at the airport or I'm nowhere near an airplane, I think about it like, oh my gosh, I'm flying an airplane. I can't believe it. It's a thrill. And because it was my greatest fear, I think that even at times I'm scared when I think about it. But when I'm sitting in the cockpit and I'm going through everything that Parrish taught me, I'm just like, you know, it's just like natural. And it flows, as everyone, all the pilots know, that it becomes second nature, just like driving does. But for me to be at home and think about it, I'm still pretty shocked that I'm able to fly something in the sky. But I think with flying, you know, it's like an ongoing challenge. You can get instrument rated, become a flight instructor. And so that, I think, will continue to be a challenge in pursuing that even further. You know, I always say that I don't think I'd ever want to do anything to prove myself to anyone. And if anything, that's the wrong reason to do something, because if we want to prove something for someone else, that's, I think that has the wrong motives, because if I did anything, it was either to prove it to myself or because of the enjoyment of it, but not to prove to anyone else that I could do it, because I didn't necessarily need to prove anything to anyone else, and I don't think anyone has to. It's just a matter of accepting ourselves and being proud of who we are. I wore prosthetic arms for 11 years, actually, and these look like two Captain Hook arms, and they could probably move up and down. The elbow could move up and down. The hook could open and close. And on the very first day of eighth grade, I remember walking to the bus stop. I went to a regular school, a regular public school, and I was in a brand new school for the first time in a new city. And I said, you know what, I've wore these prosthetic arms enough. And I remember walking to the bus stop, and I walked on the bus, and the bus door shut. I promised I would never again wear them. And to this day, they're in the closet. And for me, I think that's something that everyone has. They have their own prosthetic arms, their own fake arms, whatever inhibits them. And for me, that was my decision that I had to make, was that I had to live the rest of my life proud of who I was and not have to worry about this expectation to have fake arms if I didn't have arms. If I grew arms overnight, tomorrow if I woke up with arms, I really wouldn't know what to do with them, to be honest with you. I really don't know. I'm so accustomed to using my feet, and my brain is wired to my feet. If I'm sitting down talking to you, I'll gesture with my feet. It's so natural for me, so I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And I mean, it's incredible what they've been doing with prosthetic arms, and I definitely recommend them to people who've lost their arms due to trauma or accidents or the war or anything like that. I think it's incredible what they're doing, and I give more power. But in my situation, I was born this way, and I don't know any different. So for me to have something foreign on me is actually more difficult. I have some pretty incredible parents, as you can imagine. I want to share with you that my dad, he said from the time I was born, because both my parents actually had no expectation that I was going to be born without arms, and it was on the delivery table when they found out. So you can imagine they were in for quite a shock. And my dad, he has said on a number of occasions that he has never once shed a tear about my birth condition. And he has never once seen me as a victim. So I never had the opportunity to even think that I was a victim of this condition. And I think all of us have that with whatever issues we have in our lives, is we have the choice of whether we look at ourselves as a victim or to be the one in power. And so for me, that attitude that my dad had, he never saw me as a victim. He never once shed a tear. And I never had that as an excuse. So I lived my life saying that, you know, this is me. I'm not a victim of anything. And you know, I can do whatever I want to do. My mom told me that I could do whatever I want to do. So, yeah.
If you thought this audio was interesting, catch the video in the archives at Aero TV, dated September 2nd. Up next, Larry Neal, the guy who brought the flying motorcycle to the ultralight area. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. Another interesting short story from Oshkosh this summer was that of Larry Neal, longtime gyroplane developer, sometimes quadcopter test pilot, and designer of the Super Sky Cycle. We stopped off in the Ultralight Outpost to visit with Larry, who was getting lots of visitors at AirVenture.
We're here in the Ultralight area at Oshkosh with Larry Neal, who some of our listeners and viewers will know, some may not. Larry has a history back with gyroplanes going back quite a ways, was involved with the redesign of the Air Command airframe to make it centerline thrust back in the early 1990s, I guess. Is that about right? Larry's company now is called the Butterfly LLC, and its crowning achievement is sitting behind us here, the Super Sky Cycle. Larry, first, thanks for joining us, and what is this thing?
It's a rotable rotorcraft or a flying motorcycle. The DMV says it's a flying motorcycle, so that's fine with me.
All right, now let's talk about the DMV for a minute, because a lot of things you can build in your garage can be licensed to go on the road.
This is true.
Did they look at you funny when you said it also flies, or did you not leave out that detail when you...
Didn't even tell them, because the laws on home-built motorcycles is it has to have two or three wheels, brakes, lights, and mirrors. So we knew we didn't have a problem. Mm-hmm. Second sentence is, some states require turn signals, then it starts talking about helmet laws. So the laws aren't real strict on home-built motorcycles. You can build about anything.
Okay, now it's a little different with the home-built aircraft. A few more hoops to jump through. Were there any issues there in achieving the compromises that you needed to do?
The two FAA guys that came out were gold. They were actually the higher-up officials, not just the examiners. They wanted to see the flying motorcycle. And we sat there and laughed, and they agreed you can build anything in experimental. And then when we got done, he says, would you mind if I took a few pictures of this? And I said, fine. He said, well, can you push it out there to the grass? And I says, no, but I'll drive it out there.
Let's talk about the transition from driving to flying. How long does it take? What's involved?
Less than 3 minutes. There's no wrenches involved. It's all flip lever air valves. It's a little robot. It stands up, squats down by itself. The rotor blades fold out unbelievably easy. And less than 3 minutes from the time you pull into a field, you're starting your engine up to fly.
All right, now, some people toss the word around practical when they're talking about fly-drive vehicles. Obviously, there's some pretty serious compromises here. I'm looking at road clearance and a couple other things. This is not meant for a cross-country drive, but you're going to try one.
This is made to fly cross-country.
Right.
You fly it 90% of the time, you drive it the last 10%. That's the point. This will never be on the interstate. There's no need to be there. We're flying over them, cruising at 70 miles an hour, making them real jealous.
You have a couple of interesting trips planned. Tell us about the one to Sturgis.
We've been invited to Sturgis for the last few years, and I decided this year there's an EAA guy there. He says, would you like to come to Sturgis and put your motorcycle in my front yard? I said, you bet. Then he said, us EAA guys got to stick together. I says, that's right. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting.
All right, what about the Route 66 trip? That sounds like a blast.
We're probably planning that for next year, along about this time. We'll come up here, and then we'll do the Route 66 back toward Texas. And we'll document it and just have a ball. It'll be the first fly-drive vehicles actually following the old Route 66 and stopping along the way and driving around, and it's going to be a blast.
Well, now, over on the other side of the event here, we've got the Terrafugia, which is a bunch of MIT engineers, and then there's the Switchblade guys who are trying to raise a gazillion dollars. And
yes.
You've managed to trump them both. You've got one actually on the market now that flies and drives.
Yes, I applaud all those guys are doing. I just think it's great. Ours is right now is more for the bikers or for the pilots that like open air. Mm-hmm. And this is something that really does fit in the garage, and it has a real airplane motor on it. It's dependable. We can put auxiliary tanks, and you can fly 300 miles if you want to. So we can pretty well give people a package to fulfill their dreams. The American dream has been to have a flying machine in your garage. We accomplished that with this.
What's ahead for the future? I mean, are you taking a breath intellectually now, or are you looking ahead to even more fun projects?
Our next step is my niece is running the company. She's a high-powered Mary Kay million-and-a-half director, so she's got a brain on her head. And she's going to run the company part. Then other people run the warehouse part. It'll set me free to do R&D. And we have a company policy. We don't talk about anything we don't have off on the shelf, but we're going to surprise you here every year with something new.
We have video to go with this one, too. Find the Aero TV feature on the Super Sky Cycle in the archives at aero-tv.net, dated August 31st. And find out more about this flying motorcycle at www.thebutterflyllc.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.